doubt,
whatsoever,
the king, the best.
Pandunam,
in the dynasty of Pandu.
And of Richiti,
goes on inquiring.
And of Guryena,
the beginning to the end.
Tat,
all those.
Sarvam,
fully.
Akyatam,
to describe.
Vachakrame,
he just prepared himself.
Translation, he also prepared himself to reply to all that King Parikshit had inquired from him. Maharaj Parikshit was the best in the dynasty of the Pandus, and thus he was able to ask the right questions from the right person. Purport, Maharaj Parikshit asked many questions, some of them very curiously, to know things as they are, but it's not necessary for the master to answer them in the order the disciples' inquiries one after another. But Sukadeva Goswami, experienced teacher that he was, answered all the questions in a systematic way as they were received from the chain of disciplic succession, and he answered them all without exception. Thus end the Bhaktivedanta purports of the second canto, 8th chapter of the Srimad Bhagavatam, entitled Questions by King Parikshit.
Yad Parikshit Rishabha Pandunam Anuprichati Anupurviena Tatsarvam Agyatam Upachakrame. He, that is Sukadeva Goswami, also prepared himself to reply to all that King Parikshit had inquired from him. Maharaj Parikshit was the best in the dynasty of the Pandus, and thus he was able to ask the right questions from the right person. So that's the last text of the chapter. Chapter is entitled Questions by King Parikshit. As we know, Maharaj Parikshit was cursed by a Brahmin boy, son of Shamik Rishi, no?
Shringi.
He was cursed to die within 7 days. He had been out hunting. The Kshatriyas would go hunting to practice their skills. Reduce the number of wild animals that might disturb sages in the forest. So he was tired, he was thirsty. He came upon the ashram of Samyak Rishi. The sage was in trance of meditation and didn't notice the king, but the king felt offended. He thought the sage was ignoring him, and in a sort of moment of frustration, there was a dead snake lying on the ground, put it around the sage's neck. And this is very uncharacteristic, of course, for a great king like Parikshit Maharaj to do like that, because such great kings, they always show utmost respect to the sages and the brahmanas. But, you know, it was no doubt ultimately the arrangement of the Lord, but he was tired, he was exhausted and disappointed. And the sage's son, on seeing that, became extremely angry. He's puffed up also, being son of a sage, being a Brahmin boy. And he said, these Kshatriyas, they're like dogs. They should stay outside the door of the master, like that. And then he cursed Parikshit Maharaj to die within 7 days, to be bitten by a snake bird. And his loud crying woke up his father. father from meditation. When the father understood what had happened, he was very upset with his son. He chastised him, you know, you gave him far too severe punishment for insignificant offense. The Kshatriyas, kings, are the protectors of the Brahmanas. You shouldn't curse them to die. You know. This will just create further problems in society. Who will protect the Brahmanas? So he sent a message to Prickett Maharaj to inform him, in case Prickett Maharaj wanted to somehow get some other Brahmin to try to counteract the curse or whatever. But no, Prickett Maharaj just accepted it as the arrangement of the Lord and decided there and then to retire from the royal life and to prepare himself for leaving the body. So he sat down by the bank of the Ganges, actually Yamuna, bank of the Yamuna, as mentioned, bank of the Ganges, because all the rivers that flow into the Ganga are sometimes called Ganga. So Yamuna, it also flows into the Ganga at Trivedi Sangam. But anyway, his capital was Hastinapur. Modern Delhi is there. The Yamuna is flowing there, past Delhi, on its way to Vrindavan and Prayag. So he said, you know, he went to the bank of the Yamuna. So I guess that bliss is there. Has anyone ever visited that particular place? Is it known? Place of pilgrimage, which is no exact place, I don't know.
Between Delhi and here, some place.
There is a place which is. Must be, huh? Should be. Huh? You've gone there, okay. So there's some temple there or some.
There's a big temple, a tree, everything
is there. How far from Delhi?
3 to 4 hours.
Oh, this is quite far. Anyway. Huh? He went there, he sat down and invited the sages to come to advise him, guide him what to do at a time of death. And, you know, when all were gathered there at that time, Sukadeva Goswami, the son of Vyasadeva, appeared. His appearance was disheveled. He, as Maharaj was relating yesterday, he remained in the womb, isn't it, until about 16? Huh? He was a Brahman, realizing he didn't see any point in coming out. But when he heard his father recite the Srimad Bhagavatam to his mother while he was still in the womb, this gave him inspiration to come out and to recite the glories of the Lord. But he didn't behave as an ordinary son. It is mentioned that he left home without even undergoing the sacred thread ceremony. His father, Vyasadeva, cried out, "Oh, my son!" And he was distraught. His son was leaving so quickly. Also, it's mentioned that he didn't even wear any clothes. And he passed the lake where some ladies, young ladies, were bathing. But they were not at all disturbed. They felt he was so completely on a transcendental platform that probably didn't even notice them, and they hardly noticed him. You know. But when his father, Vyasadeva, passed, then they covered themselves because because Vyasadeva was a householder, he made distinctions between, you know, different kinds of personalities, men, women, etc. But Sukadeva Goswami was completely on the transcendental platform. No bodily identification whatsoever. And it's mentioned that he wandered in the provinces of Kuru and Jangala, appearing like a madman, dumb and retarded. Sometimes the great sages, you know, they were so oblivious to external affairs that he wandered around naked, just disheveled, and long hair. Like Rishabdev also, Maharaj Rishabdev, when he retired, he also was wandering like that. People might throw stones, and the Sukadev Goswami is mentioned, you know, that the women and children would follow him and make fun of him like that. But he was a complete transcendentalist. And when he came to the place where Prickett Maharaj was seated with the sages and came into assembly, actually the sages immediately, everyone recognized this is highly exalted personality. And they offered him the principal seat to offer, you know, responses to the questions of Prickett Maharaj. So this is how he came to be the speaker of the Srimad Bhagavatam. So in this chapter here, Prickett Maharaj is posing his questions. These are many important questions prior to leaving his body. And I guess we can compare these, of course, to the questions asked by the sages in the forest of Naimisharanya to Suta Goswami, and their relevant question, what was Suta Goswami's response? He said, "O sages, I have been justly questioned by you. Your questions are worthy because they are of relevance to the world's welfare. Only questions of this sort are capable of completely satisfying the self." The Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada, mentions that for spiritual knowledge to be transmitted, the speaker must be bona fide and the hearer must be submissive and inquisitive. Then spiritual knowledge can be transmitted. He said, just like if a man is potent and a woman is fertile, then a child can be produced. But if the woman is barren or the man is impotent, no child. Mm-hmm. So, same way, huh? The speaker has to be bona fide and the hearer has to be submissive and inquisitive, sincere. So that was the right combination, both in the case of Sukadeva and King Parikit and Suta Goswami and the sages. Suta Goswami, of course, simply repeated what he had heard. He was present in this assembly when Parikit was questioning Sukadeva Goswami, so Suta Goswami heard and he repeated that to the sages in Naimisharanya. So there are many questions here, and these topics are all dealt with in the Srimad Bhagavatam. There's a whole chapter full of questions. But the principal question at the beginning, you know, the very first questions, the king said, King Parikit inquired from Subhadev Goswami, how did Narada Muni, whose hearers are as fortunate as those instructed by Lord Brahma, explain the transcendental qualities of the Lord, who is without material qualities, and before whom did he speak? The king said, I wish to know. Narrations concerning the Lord, who possesses wonderful potencies, are certainly auspicious for living beings in all planets. Oh, greatly fortunate Shukadeva Goswami, please continue narrating Srimad Bhagavatam so that I can place my heart upon the Supreme Soul, Lord Krishna, and being completely freed from material qualities, thus relinquish this body. Persons who hear Srimad Bhagavatam regularly and are always taking the matter very seriously will have the personality of Godhead Sri Krishna manifested in their hearts within a short time. The sound incarnation of Lord Krishna, the Supreme Soul, that is Srimad Bhagavatam, enters into the heart of a self-realized devotee, sits on the lotus flower of his loving relationship, and thus cleanses the dust of material association, such as lust, anger, and hankering. Thus it acts like autumnal rains upon pools of muddy water. A pure devotee of the Lord, whose heart has once been cleansed by the process of devotional service, never relinquishes the lotus feet of Lord Krishna, for they fully satisfy him, as a traveler is satisfied at home after a troubled journey. So that's the principal question he's asking, to describe the glories of the Lord, specifically as Narada Muni described them. And then he goes on to other questions like, the transcendental spirit soul is different from the material body. Does he acquire the body accidentally or by some cause? Kindly explain this, for it is known to you. Then, if the Supreme Lord, from whose abdomen the lotus stem sprouted, is possessed of a gigantic body according to his own caliber and measurement, then what's the specific difference between the body of the Lord and those of the common living entities? Brahma, who was not born of a material source, but of the lotus flower coming out of the navel abdomen of the Lord, is the creator of all those who are materially born. Of course, by the grace of the Lord, Brahma was able to see the form of the Lord. Please also explain the personality of God. He lies in everyone's heart as a super soul and as the Lord of all energies, but is untouched by the external energy. So going on like that, and then he asks for description of the Virat Purusha, the universal form, different planetary systems, creation and annihilation, demigods, human beings, different planets, many, many topics, subject matters, and points of life. But the principal one is about the Lord himself, his transcendental pastimes, his transcendental qualities, and then how he creates the material universes. So these topics are all discussed in great detail in the Srimad Bhagavatam. As Prabhupada says here in the purport, Shukadeva Goswami doesn't answer the questions exactly in the order that they were asked, but he does answer them all in the course of the, all without exception, he says, in the course of the Srimad Bhagavatam. So the next chapter is answers by citing the Lord's version, and that contains the four seed verses of the Bhagavatam, which you'll be reading, starting from, is it text 33, beginning from text Yeah, there's 36 pages of purports to the four seed verses. The prophet devotes a lot of time in the commentary. But No, basically, that describes how, you know, Lord Brahma, in the beginning when he appeared on top of the lotus flower, there was only darkness and silence in the universe. He was trying to find out the source of his existence, climbed down the lotus and couldn't find, returned to the top. Then the Lord spoke the word tapa, austerity. So he followed that instruction by meditating for a long period of time, and eventually Lord appeared to him. Lord was very pleased and glorified the austerities and tapasya that Brahma had performed, said that penance and I are non-different, this is the means to know me, and he congratulated Brahma, and he manifested the spiritual world before Brahma, and he spoke these four seed verses. Brahma was concerned that, you know, if he engaged in creation, that he would become affected by the material energy, he would forget the Lord. So the Lord was encouraging him that you see me in all circumstances. You know, I existed prior to the material creation. I am existing during it, maintaining it. I will continue to exist afterwards. So you see me in all circumstances, in all times and places, past, present, future, and like that. You know, the essence of the Srimad Bhagavatam, to be God conscious, to be Krishna conscious, and at all times, in all circumstances, and to see everything as emanating from the Lord, as connected to the Lord, as the energy of the Lord. So in this way, don't get distracted and bewildered by the external energy, but see it in a Krishna conscious way. And Prabhupada, he said once, material means forgetfulness of Krishna, and spiritual means remembrance of Krishna. So the devotee should see the material energy also as Krishna's energy and use it in Krishna's service, thus spiritualizing it, and not getting bewildered by the material energy, but rather seeing it in a spiritual way and using it in a spiritual way, as recommended by Rupa Goswami, Anasaktasya Visayan Yataham Upayunjata Nirbanda Krishna Sambande Yukta Vairanyam Uchate Prapanchikataya Budya Harisambandu Vastana Mumukshabi Parityago Falgu Vairanya Katyate. So he's explaining the difference between practical renunciation, yukta vairagya, and false renunciation, falgu vairagya. So he says, one who sees everything in relation to Krishna and uses everything in the service of the Lord is properly situated above possessiveness. Whereas those who reject everything, not understanding the connection with the Lord, they are falsely renounced. Basically, that refers to impersonalists. So you say everything is Maya, but you say everything is Maya, including the form of the Lord. Everything is Maya. Therefore, we should reject everything. The Mayavadis say that unless you become a sannyasi or a nutsi, you can't make spiritual advancement. You have to give up everything, go away, whatever, to the Himalayas, and live in a cave, and meditate on Brahman. But Prabhupada says many such persons, after some time, they become dissatisfied and go back to the cities and perform mundane welfare work because they couldn't get that satisfaction of heart from trying to give up their personality and merge into Brahman. Because a living being, actually in Mayavadis, they give one example. They say that the living being is like a water pot, like a clay water pot. You know, when it's empty and you hit it with a stick, it makes a noise, a green noise. And when it's full and you hit it with a stick, you know, there's no sound. So, like that, the Mayavadis say, when a person has no spiritual knowledge or understanding, then he's always talking and acting and making a lot of noise, basically. But when he becomes, you know, absorbed in Brahman and fully satisfied by that, you know, Brahman meditation, then he stops talking, he stops acting, he stops making noise. But Prabhupada said this is not a valid example. A living being is not a static object like a water pot. A living being is dynamic, energetic. As Krishna says, one cannot stop from activity even for a moment. So we are always doing something. Thinking on three platforms that we are active, you know, physical, vocal, and mental. We are always doing something, isn't it? Working, going here and there, and talking with our friends, talking on our phones, like that. And thinking also, of course. So many thoughts. I don't know how many thoughts they say go through the mind every day. 100,000 or some more, maybe. So we are active on these levels, so. But you can act in different ways in these levels. In the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna is analyzing three modes of material nature in great detail. You know, how you can be, you know, acting in goodness, passion, or ignorance, speaking in goodness, passion, or ignorance. Like that, thinking different ways. And accordingly, we get different kind of results. But, you know, the goal is not just to act in the mode of goodness, although that is certainly better than passion or ignorance. But the goal is to rise above the modes of material nature and act on the spiritual platform. So, you know, Krishna explaining the process of bhakti yoga, you know, by which one can act in this world with this body, but in a way which is spiritual, is connected to Krishna, is uplifting and raises one above the three modes of material nature. Mamcha yoga, vyabhicharana, bhakti yoga, nisevate, sagunan, samatityatan, brahma bhuyaya kalpate. One who is engaged in devotional service and it doesn't fall down, he transcends the modes of material nature and he attains to the spiritual platform. So this is the science of bhakti yoga. How to perform one's thoughts and words and deeds in the service of Krishna. As Krishna says in 10:9, I think it's Machyuta Madgata Prana Odayantas Prasparam Katayantas Chamanicha Tushanti Cha Ramanticha. The thoughts of my pure devotees dwell in me, their lives are surrendered to me, and they derive great satisfaction and bliss from enlightening one another, conversing about me. So we see there are three levels of the mental thoughts, and their lives are devoted to me, so they engage it physically, and they speak about Krishna, or about devotional service. So thoughts, words, and deeds are all dovetailed in the service of the Lord. I think it's Vishwanath Chakravarti in the Maturya Kadambini. He speaks also about this point. You know, he analyzes the verses of Rupa Goswami, Ado Shraddha Tata, Sadhusangita, Bhajana Kriya, those verses which describe different stages of progress from beginning to the goal of Krishna Prema. So some faith has to be there, at least some initial kind of faith that attracts one to come and associate with devotees. If there wouldn't be any faith at all, you know, one might not come. But something, you know, some initial faith, and that by association of devotees, that sadhu sangha, that faith increases, and one becomes engaged in bhajana kriya, devotional activities. And usually, you know, it's easier to get engaged in the physical things first, like devotees may give some service, clean the floor, help cut the vegetables or whatever. Slowly, slowly, one could learn to chant, you know, on the vocal level, chant and speak about Krishna, and then eventually to think more of Krishna, to eventually fix him on the mind fully. But anyway, the bhajana kriya is anishta in the beginning, unsteady, due to anarthas, various kinds of anarthas, various kinds of reactions from the past, or desire for material enjoyment, or offenses can be there also. It disturbs the, you know, neophyte devotee, but as what's the answer? The solution, and Vishwanath said, we have to go on steadily performing the process. It may take time, it may take a long time. Well, it could even take lifetimes. It depends on the individual. But you know, gradually, he becomes purified by that practice. So he comes to the anartha nivritti stage. He gets free from these impurities and then becomes nishta, fixed. Now, the bhajana kriya, his devotional service becomes fixed. So Vishwanath says, usually, as we mentioned, easier to become fixed in physically than vocally and mentally. But eventually, if a devotee becomes fully fixed on all those platforms, then he develops ruchi, higher taste, asakti, deep attachment to Krishna, but progresses to higher stages of bhava and prema. So this is the idea then, to learn, as the Lord himself taught Brahma, to learn to see Krishna in all circumstances. As Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, for one who sees me everywhere and sees everything in me, I am never lost to him, nor is he ever lost to me. Manmana bhavamad bhakto madhyajimam namaskuru mami vaishyasi satyam te pratijane priyosime. Always think of me, become my devotee, worship me, and offer your homage to me. Thus you will come to me without fail. I promise you this because you're my very dear friend. So this is actually the central focus of Parikkhita Maharaj's questions. You know, how to do that, how to remember Krishna at all times and in all circumstances. And then the other questions are all, of course, related to that, because we are living in the material world and we can easily become bewildered or distracted by the material energy. So, you know, we have to understand, how is it working, what are the mechanics behind, but ultimately how is it connected to Krishna, and how, you know, we can use that material energy to help us to develop Krishna consciousness and help others to develop Krishna consciousness as well. So, Hare Krishna. Any question or comment? Yes, please. Yes, they were all persons of the highest caliber. Transcendentalists of the highest caliber.
Krishna recommends work in devotion in Bhagavad Gita. That is, how pride and renunciation. My question is whether working devotion is not in the mode of passion.
Well, it can be. Tinged by passion, yes. And Kapila Dev does describe that in the third canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam. He describes how devotees may be affected by the modes of nature. That a devotee who is affected by the mode of ignorance, he easily becomes proud. He thinks, I'm the best devotee, and I'm doing so much service, nobody else is doing anything significant like that. Or he may become envious of other devotees, criticize other devotees like that. These are symptoms of the mode of ignorance. And one who is greatly affected by passion, then he may, you know, want to use the devotional service to become, so he become, you know, respected and famous and wealthy like that. These are symptoms of mode of passion. And Kapil Dev said these are separate as tendencies. A person is not fully surrendered, but still he's practicing. You know, he's following the path. He's somewhere on the right path. If he keeps going, he can become gradually purified. You know, as long as he doesn't commit Vaishnava aparads, or too many of them, or if he commits them, at least he apologizes. One who is affected by the mode of goodness, he said, he's very focused on his own spiritual progress. That's his primary interest, how I will make spiritual advancement. But, you know, he's naturally much more regulated and peaceful. So that's a much better position, like springboard for rising to the Shuddhasattva platform of pure devotional service. You know, which is free from the, you know, desire for even one's own spiritual advancement. The consciousness of devotees, just how to serve Krishna, how to serve Krishna's devotees. And Kapil Dev said that's like the Ganges that flows to the ocean and cannot be stopped by any material obstacle. So that's the highest platform. But, you know, we can't expect that. You know, from day one, everyone is going to, you know, be on that platform. We are coming to Krishna consciousness after a long sojourn in the material world and having a background of so much association, you know, with materialistic persons and being ourselves materialistic. So, you know, it's a gradual process. It has to be patience in order to become purified. But Lord accepts the service of sincere devotees. You know, there are nishkama devotees and sakama devotees. Those who are free from material desires and those who are full of material, or have material, maybe not full of them, maybe they have a lot or not so much, but they have material desires. The Prabhupada said the demigods are sakama devotees. They have material desires. And we read in the Bhagavatam, you know, different incidents involving, you know, Indra and other demigods, you know, which sometimes, you know, not exemplary of, you know, great devotees or pure devotees, but still it happens, because you're in the material world, dangerous place. So demigods are sakama devotees. The Lord naturally prefers the service of the nishkama devotees, completely pure devotees who are free from material desire. But he also accepts the service of the sakama devotees. He's merciful. So he accepts the service of the demigods. The Prabhupada mentioned in that place, it's in the sixth canto, where he says the demigods are sakama devotees. He said they get some reaction for that in the form of harassment from demons. But they always take shelter of the Lord, and the Lord always helps them and protects them. Helps them to defeat the demons. So yes, it may be that, you know, devotees might manifest, you know, symptoms of ignorance or passion, but, you know, we have to be tolerant and try to continue the process. Be patient, be tolerant, and you know, not just absorb ourselves in criticizing other devotees, they're not doing this, they did this wrong, that wrong. There are some personalities, you know, who seem to make it even occupational, whatever, occupation to, you know, criticize on the internet, isn't it? I mean, this is internet has given a great facility to broadcast, you know, complaints and criticism. Unfortunately, one is best advised not to listen to such kata, as it can seriously damage one's spiritual life. To listen to criticism of Vaishnavas is very detrimental. Raghunath Bhatta Goswami said he would never listen to criticism of a Vaishnava. He liked to see the positive qualities. The Prabhupada said, one who always looking for faults is a fifth class man. If you always meditate on the faults of others and broadcast the faults of others, you'll develop the faults in yourself. Rather, a first class man is always looking for the virtues in others. But by seeing the virtues in others and meditating in the virtues in others, you can develop those good qualities in yourself. We have to follow in the footsteps of the great souls who are focused on chanting the glories of the Lord, broadcasting the glories of the Lord, helping others to engage in devotional service of the Lord. And that way, you know, gradually you can overcome these influence of the lower modes of nature. We shouldn't become, you know, puffed up. I'm so advanced. The great Uttamadhikaris, they always thinking of themselves very fallen. They see others as devotees and themselves as not devotees. Of course, you know, for preaching, you know, the Uttamadhikaris always also act on the Madhyam platform and make some distinction. So they may criticize sometimes the materialistic activities, you know, just to point out, you know, what to do and what not to do. But still they're focused on the positive of, you know, encouraging people to chant Hare Krishna and to engage in the devotional service of the Lord. Increase the positive and don't dwell on the negative. That will help us to advance and help others to advance also. And don't be surprised, you know. I was in Suriswar's presentation, one of his slides. You know, do not expect utopia. Probably. Do not expect utopia. Everything in ISKCON may not be perfect. I mean, we're also in the material world, but still, you know, ISKCON is a society which is dedicated to, you know, broadcasting the glories of the Lord, to inspiring people to chant Hare Krishna and engage in devotional service. So there may be, you know, problems here and there, faults here and then. Sometimes also devotees think in Prabhupada's time everything was perfect, you know. Now there's so many problems. There were so many problems also in Prabhupada, politics, conflicts between devotees and this and that. It also was there, you know. But, you know, if we remain positive, go on with the process, we can overcome all these obstacles. Do not be discouraged. Prabhupada said that was the same mistakes all over again that has occurred, you know, in Indian society, in Varnashram. You know, that's a very good point. The caste, if the brahmanas or the devotees shun those who are, you know, not on the, you know, completely pure platform, then, and become proud and isolate themselves, you know, and reject others, you know, or reject devotees who are struggling a bit like that, then it will create the same dynamic, you know, negative dynamic, and you know, they won't really be able to fulfill their role of uplifting everyone. So yes, they have to. There has to be, as Anuruddha mentioned, within reason. You know, I mean, if people are behaving in a completely crazy fashion, that's another matter. They may have to be sort of excluded. You know, sometimes it happens, but in general, you know, we have to be a bit tolerant and encourage everybody to do the positive things of chanting Hare Krishna, hearing the glories of the Lord, engaging in devotional service like that. As is mentioned, Lord Chaitanya, he didn't consider who was fit or who was unfit. He simply broke open the storehouse of love of God and distributed the contents liberally. Okay. I thank you very much. Hare Krishna. Ram Taraj Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai.